All right. Very happy to be here. What we're going to learn today, it's a class based on a discourse by the Rebbe. The truth is that the discourse is very short because it's based on a very long discourse of a different Rebbe, of the fourth Rebbe of Chabad, the Rebbe Maharash. Rabbi Yishnu Shmuel was his name. What we're going to learn today, it's a something that is called a remez, I would call it, or a drush. Remez means an allusion, that something in the Torah alludes to something else. What does that mean? This is not the only explanation of this particular subject, and this is not the simple explanation of this subject. And you'll see as we move on. A drush, drasha means an allegory, a teaching, usually means something that leaves a lesson. An allusion not necessarily leaves a lesson, it's just connection between two different ideas. But a drush, a drasha, usually leaves a lesson. So we, in this particular case, maybe it's a combination of both methods of learning Torah. So with no further ado, let's start, and I think you will see, maybe one more, one more introduction, I'm sorry. One more introduction, I think it's important. We're going to learn about the altar. In this particular parsha, we learn the reading of this week is called Re'eh, and it talks about sacrifices. Where can you do sacrifices? Where can you not do sacrifices? Specifically talking about Jews. It's not talking about non-Jews, not in this particular parsha, regarding this issue. Today, we don't have a temple. The temple is occupied. The place where the temple should be, it's occupied with something else. I don't want to go into details. But we don't have a temple, and the Rambam actually says, even if we had a temple, even if we don't have a temple, if we had the place of the altar, the exact place where the altar was, we would be able to bring offerings. But the truth is, we don't have this. We don't have a prophet to tell us where the altar was, and so on. So we don't bring offerings. What does that mean? It means that for whatever reason, God doesn't want right now our offerings. He wants us to learn from the different ideas regarding the offerings to our service to Him now, in this particular new age, so to speak. The truth is, if the temple is built right now and this is what we are expecting, we would bring offerings and so on. But right now, let's take a picture of this moment. Now, there's no temple. Does it mean that I can't serve God with the lessons and teachings and so on that the temple actually had? No. It means you cannot bring a physical animal to the temple, but you can bring yourself and you can bring and serve God in a, as we're going to learn, different particular way as we did in the temple. Having said that, I'm not going to discuss right now sacrifices for Bnei Noach because I think it's such a weird thing and very simple thing. Let's not do this. I don't think it's a good idea. But without discussing this, let's move on into the teaching. Now, over here, you will see two verses. I put it in Hebrew and in English. For whomever knows Hebrew, fine. If you don't know Hebrew, don't worry. That's why it's in English also. And the Torah is talking is in Parshas Yisro. It's right after the giving of the Torah. The Torah tells the Jews to build an altar, Mizbeach. That's what it's called, Mizbeach, the altar. And if you see the two verses, if you read it very quickly, you will see something strange. I actually underlined it. The first verse says, "Make for me an altar." Like, it's an order. Go do it. I didn't ask you if you like it or not. And the second one says, if you make an altar for me, blah, 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 blah. So wait a second. Is it an obligation or not? First verse sounds, it is an obligation. From the second one, it sounds not so much. And they're talking about actually these two verses about two different types of altars. The first one talks about an altar of earth. Mizbeach HaDama, Mizbach HaDama, whatever. An altar of earth. And the second one talks about Mizbeach Avanim, an altar of stones. So we see from these two verses that there's something going on over here. If you're talking about an altar made of earth, go and do it. No question, no conditions. And if you talk about a mizbeach, an altar of stones, there are conditions. Why? What does it mean? What? And of course, what's the lesson for us? Okay, let's move on. First of all, as I mentioned in the introduction, we can't bring offerings today. We don't know where the altar was. We know where the temple was, but there's something occupying the space. So we can't bring an offering. And that means that we have to find, and our sages actually write a lot about this, spiritual teachings, lessons from the altar and the temple and so on. There are so many. We're just going to talk about one particular issue. What's the altar? What does the altar teach? The altar means elevation. Very simple, because people used to bring offerings in the altar, burned the offerings in the altar, and the burned thing just went up, so to speak, into the heavens, into God, towards God, whatever that means, and means elevation of the world into godliness. And Kabbalah talks about this, Hasidus talks about this, very, very, a lot of information we have on this. But the point is, over here, we're learning about elevation. Elevation of what? Of you, each one of us. We are supposed to elevate ourselves towards God. And this can be understood in many, many different ways. The simplest way is develop your, in Hebrew is midos, your good qualities, develop yourself, grow yourself in knowledge, in emotions. Okay, grow, elevate yourself. If you want to go a little bit deeper, very, very small ideas, I mean, big ideas in small words, in few words. The world is comprised of four types of creatures. The first ones is inanimate objects like stones and so on. Second one, vegetable things, then animals, and then human beings. And the way each one of these domains, so to speak, goes over itself, goes beyond itself, is by being included in the next one. So when a plant actually takes a mineral, the mineral became plant. When an animal eats the plant, so the plant became animal. And when the human being eats the animal, so the animal became human being. So what about the human being? Where do we go? So the answer is very simple. When the person connects to God, so you get elevated to God, and you become, so to speak, a piece of God. This is basically the idea of elevation. You have to elevate yourself. And if you want to see this in a much more simple way, and I hope this is not the case of anyone, stop hitting your wife. When you don't like something she tells you, don't hit her. You can't, you know? I don't know if you knew about this. Don't do that. Oh, but I thought, yeah. No. Grow. As a human being, as a regular, normal human being, grow. This is just one example of something a person can grow on. Okay, so let's move on. This is the altar. This is the mizbeach. Means elevate yourself towards God, use the world to serve God, and so on. But we have two types. That's what we mentioned before. Two types of altars. One is conditional, the stone ones, and one is not conditional, the earth one. The word earth, mizbeach adama in Hebrew, is connected to two ideas. First idea is that actually man, human being, is called Adam. And Adam, a human being, is connected to Adama, earth. Why? For two reasons. First of all, the simplest one is because man was created from earth. So Adam, man, Adama, earth, so they're connected. The body, at least, was created from the ground, from earth. And a very higher, very much higher idea, second idea is that we are Adame le Elion. We are similar. Adame means to be similar, dimion, similarity. And Adam means human being. Adama means earth. So Adame le Elion. I look like a supernal man, which is sitting in the throne of whatever glory, as the prophets saw him. So since we are created in the image of God, we are like, so to speak, God. Whatever the image means, we have to do a whole class on what means to be created in the image of God. We spoke a little bit about this. But besides that idea, I'm just bringing two different ideas of why man is called actually Adam in Hebrew, man. Again, because we were created from Adama, from earth, or because we are Adame, le alien. We are like God, godliness inside of us, and so on. So evidently, the Mizbeach Adama, the altar made of Adama, earth, has something to do with these ideas. Being created from earth, being created in the image of God, there's something about our, as we're going to see and learn, our creation, our status, so to speak, as a human being, normal human being. But then there's another Mizbeach, there's another altar which is of stones. What's the symbolism, so to speak, of a stone, as we will learn more details later? A stone in this particular Hasidic teaching means that it so low came the sparks of godliness that they even give life to a stone. Actually, the Arizal, a great Kabbalist in 1500s in Tzfas, in the north of Eretz Israel, the Arizal used to say that even the stones have a soul. We used to think, yeah, human beings have a soul, maybe animals also, but plants? Stones? What are you talking about? Yes, even stones have a soul. And what's the soul of a stone? The words of God creating that stone. But clearly, you don't see, at least in an open way, godliness in the stone. You can see a beautiful stone, like whatever, diamonds and something like that, or a regular, not so nice stone, whatever. But you don't see godliness in the stone. You see beauty or not, whatever, but you don't see godliness. So that means, that represents that the godliness which is within the stone, don't come to say that the stone doesn't have a godliness. It does have godliness, but the godliness is so hidden, it came so low into the stone that you cannot recognize it. So when we're talking about an altar made of stone, it means that we have to elevate something that came really down. Again, we spoke about two types of altars, altar made of earth, which apparently is what we are made of, and either because of earth or because of the image of God and so on. And that means you have to still elevate yourself. You're done with this. It's your normal state, and you still have to elevate yourself. Don't just remain wherever you are. You have to move. Move on. Move forward. Don't move back. You don't have to go back. Just forward. Like the bicycle, you know? It's a famous example. Judaism is like the bicycle. You just can go forward. You can't go back, because there's no way of going back with the bicycle. And if you want to remain in one place, you fall. That's it. You can't remain in one place. It's a famous example of what Judaism is like, the bicycle. Okay, so having said all of this, again, two types of serving God, because we're talking about altar means elevation, earth or stone. Okay, keep this in your mind. We'll get back to this. Let's move into a different subject. This is a very common known idea in Kabbalah, of the Arizal also, the idea of Gilgul. Gilgul means reincarnation, that every single soul goes back and forth, up and down, many, many, many times. The truth is that most of us, and that includes Jews and non-Jews, most of us are Megulgalim. Megulgalim means we already came back and forth so many times, sometimes doing what we have to do, but we missed something, so we come back. Sometimes we didn't do what we had to do, so we come back. And sometimes it's a sin, we sinned, so we come back to try to fix what we did wrong. Now, let's read a little bit. Let's take the generation of the Tower of Babel. Tower of Babel is at the end of Parshas Noach, when the people, there were no Judaism, not such a thing didn't exist at that age, at that stage in the Torah, in the history. So the people wanted actually to do idolatry. This is what our sages say in the Talmud. It's like a famous thing. Why did they want to do this tower and go up to heavens? Because they wanted to fight God. Okay. How did they do this particular tower that they couldn't finish? How did they do this? The Torah says, let us build a city and a tower with the city with its top in the sky, and let's make a name for ourselves. This is where our sages learned this idea of making a name. They wanted to use the name of God to do idolatry. That's what our sages say in the Talmud. This is the way, I put it in Hebrew also, they decided to start building, actually, this tower. They said one to another, come us, let us make bricks and burn them hard. They lived in Babel. In Babylon, there were no stones over there. So they had to do bricks. And the brick served them as stone. This is what the verse says. Bricks and stones, basically, in this particular place, is the same. They use the bricks as stones. And the way the Torah says it is a very special wording. You see over here in Hebrew, Evan. Evan means stone. You see Leveina means a brick. Leveina means a brick. And then Choimer. Choimer means like the mortar they used to use for the bricks themselves. Okay, this is the story of Babel. Of course, God did not allow them to do this. They spread it out. God spread them out throughout the world. Okay, very nice. Go look in the Torah, Parshas Noach, at the end of Parshas Noach. Let's move forward into history, and we see actually the Jewish people in Egypt before the Torah was given. The Jewish people in Egypt, they were suffering, and it was very hard. Ruthlessly, they made life bitter and so on. Doing what? With mortar and bricks. Choimer and levaining. Now, again, even if you don't know Hebrew, it doesn't matter. Look at this word over here. Choimer is just the same word as over here. Choimer, Chaimar. Look, levaining, bricks, is the same word as levaina. Levaining is in plural, bricks. And levain is one. With this, the Arizal says, the generation of the Jewish people in Egypt, they were actually a reincarnation of the generation of the people in the Tower of Babel. They wanted to use bricks as stones and mortar to fight God, so to speak. And the generation of the Jewish people in Egypt, they fixed their sin, like thousands of years ago, they fixed their sin using exactly the same thing, Choimer and Levainim. Using the mortar and the bricks to actually, again, build whatever Paro, the king of Egypt, wanted. But this was their fix. The way they actually improved their own souls many, many, many years ago. That's the connection. Okay, so again, what do we have? Let's go back a little bit. We have two types of altar. Altar means elevation. Two types, earth, stone. And we have a connection between the tower, the people of the Tower of Babel and the people of Egypt. What's the connection? These two words, Choimer and Levainim. And between parentheses, I'm not going to expand on this, but the Zohar talks about this also in learning Torah. Choimer means Kalva Choimer, one of the ways of learning Torah. And Levainim means Libun Hilchosa, the making white, that means refining the law. Finding out the law. So today, we, and this is what we're going to see this later, much later in the discourse, today we are also fixing what they did before, both in the times of Egypt and the times of the Tower of Babel. Our generation, as we're going to learn later, it's actually a reincarnation of the generation of the desert, which is a reincarnation of the generation of Egypt, which is a reincarnation of the generation of Tower of Babel. And we're still fixing this. Choimer and Levainim, but we do it learning Torah, deeply engaging in learning Torah. And they did it with bricks and so on. Okay, as we're going to learn. Okay, let's close parentheses. We're not going to go back exactly to this Torah thing. Let's move on. So again, hey, this was... Oh, okay. I moved back. Let's move on. So again... This is just a copy of the same verse. They used the bricks, and the bricks were as stones. What means a stone? What's a stone? Let's take this in a deeper way of understanding. Sefer Yetzirah is a book. Nobody knows who wrote it, actually. Some people say that, actually, Avraham Avinu wrote it. Nobody knows. But the point is, it's a Kabbalah book. It's a philosophy book. Interesting, difficult book to learn. Short and difficult. But over there it says that two stones build two houses. What does it mean with a stone and a house? Over there, the idea is that each letter, like in speech, is a stone. It's like a stone. Just as with letters, you build words, with stones, you build houses. A house is a word that contains an idea. And the classical example is, I put it over here because it's the easiest one, two letters build two houses. With two letters, you can only combine it in one way or the other. Not, you can't more than that. So these two combinations actually mean two letters. I'm sorry, two words. Av, over here, means father. And ba means comes. So again, two letters build two houses. I mean, two stones build two houses, two letters, two words, two possible words. So having said all of these, now we understand what a stone means. A stone means a letter. A letter. And the people of the generation of the Tower of Babel, they used bricks as stones because they didn't have stones, so they used the bricks. But basically, in this particular way, this particular Maimar discourse is the same. A stone and a brick in this place is the same. In other places, it's not the same because a stone is made by God and a brick is made by men. But it's a different idea. Let's not talk about everything because it's going to be too difficult. But the point is that you wanted to use the stones to fight God. That means, again, the generation of the Tower of Babel, they wanted to do idolatry. They used the names of God in order to do idolatry. That means the stones, quote-unquote, letters to do idolatry. They used letters in an evil way. And if anybody has a question, what does it mean to use letters and words and so on in an evil way, here you have a few examples. Lashon Hara, Batong, or if you lie, or deceive, or whatever, all kinds of things that a person can say, or if you embarrassed somebody by talking to somebody, if you talk bad about somebody, even if it's true, and so on. So it's not so difficult to use letters and words in a bad way. Actually, Shlomo Melech, King Solomon, used to say, it's in Mishlei, if I'm not mistaken, that Chaim Umavet Beyad Loshen, that there's life and death in the hands, so to speak, of the tongue. If you use the tongue in a good way, you bring life. If you use the tongue in a bad way, you bring death into the world, literally, or spiritually at least. In any case, we do see that the idea of using stones in a bad way means actually talking bad about people, lashon hara, and so on. And this is connected to idolatry, which the connection is not really important right now, but the point is that the people of the Tower of Babel, they used bricks as stones. So that means, in other words, that the godliness came down very, very, very low, even into idolatry, even into stones, but really, quote unquote, bad stones. Because you could have good stones, which is good words and so on. But this, in this case, we're talking about something bad. This is what the stone represents. Always keep in mind, we have two ways of serving God. Way number one is earth. We didn't discuss this. And the way number two is stones. But stones represent something bad. Something really evil in this particular case. Bad words, idolatry, and so on. This is what stone represents. So, having said all of that, we have two ways of serving God. The earth, serving God as in an earth way, elevating yourself towards God in an earthly way means the way God created you, straight, in the right path, so to speak. So if you serve God in this way, you're basically in the right path. You didn't do anything wrong. You're just moving forward with your life in a proper way. God made man straight. That's even a verse. But that's what it means to serve God in an earthly way. But then there's service to God in a stone way. That means you didn't do things right. You actually did the opposite of doing right. Actually, you fell into idolatry or whatever. So you have to fix this somehow. That's what the stone represents. So let's put it all together. Service to God as earth in an earthly way. Why does the verse, if you remember, let's just go back a second, over here. When the Torah talks about doing an altar, again, two verses, the first verse, it's an order. Make for me an altar of earth. And the second verse, it's a condition. If you make for me an altar of stones, you should do it this and that way. Why is the first verse an obligation, so to speak, and the second one is just conditional? Let's go back, forward, back to the future. Because in the service of God, in an earthly way, everybody has to do this. We're all obligated to this. In other words, hello, you're a human being. And you should behave like one. In all the sense of what it means. It doesn't really matter whether you're Jewish or not Jewish. You should behave like a human being. A straight human being. Don't lie. Be good to others. And so on. Whatever that means. Hopefully any normal human being knows what that means. So, you should behave like a human being. Everybody should do this. And this is the straight path. Everybody's obligated to this. No conditional. What do you mean conditional? If I want to behave like a human being, no, no, no. You have to. This is what God created. This is the way God created you. This is a natural way of serving God. However, you can only behave this way within permissible limits. What does that mean? There are certain things that God wants and certain things God does not want. For a Jew, it's going to be 613 commandments, whatever the cases are, 248 positive things you have to go and do, 365 things you don't have to do, and so on. And for non-Jews, it's going to be 7 general commandments and all the ramifications that come out of those commandments. In this sense, you will find in the world things, attitudes, words, and objects that are permissible to be used, and that means you have to use them in the service of God. That's why they're there. That's why actually you got in touch with those things. You're supposed to use whatever you get in touch with in the service of God. And if you didn't get in touch with that, it's because it's not your particular job to serve God with that, to refine that thing. For instance, very simple. I never went to Australia. Very nice, but I didn't went there. So that means that there's nothing over there for me, my particular soul, to do, to serve God with. No, that's why I didn't never went. And if the opportunity in my life for whatever reason comes and I go to Australia, that means whatever I get in touch with, it's waiting there from the creation. That means 5,700 and so on years ago for me to go over there and use it in the service of God. And even if it's just stepping on a stone in the street, our sages in the Hasidic thought, they say that if you step on a stone in the street, like walking in the street, and you're not thinking words of Torah, the stone like looks at you and asks you. The original teaching is in Russian, gulag. I don't know Russian, it's just this one word, gulag. Like you're a thing over there, you're not even a human being. Why are you stepping on me? I'm fulfilling my purpose as a stone, but you're not fulfilling yours. You should be thinking words of Torah. So why are you stepping on me? You're not better than me. Of course, I don't think anybody hears the stones screaming. And if you hear stones screaming, you better go to a doctor. You probably need help. But this is the idea of anything you get in touch with, you're supposed to be serving God with that. Using that in the way that thing is used. But again, there are certain things that you cannot use. What does that mean? For instance, I cannot use the property of somebody else. It belongs to somebody else. If I use it, even if I want to serve God with that, you're stealing. That's not allowed. It's a whole chapter. It's a very interesting chapter in the Gemara in Talmud, talking about Sukkos, Lulav, and so on, the festivity of huts and so on, whatever. Lulav HaGozul. Can I steal an object and do a mitzvah with it? Can I steal money and give tzedakah out of that money? Does God want my tzedakah, my charity? And the answer is no. It's called in Hebrew mitzvah abave aveira. It's a mitzvah that comes from, it's a good behavior, but comes from a transgression. That's not allowed. God doesn't like it. No, because you stole in order to give tzedakah. No, 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 no. That's not good tzedakah. So again, there are certain things in the world that are not permissible, that are not usable. Or for instance, objects that belong to idolatry, even if you don't steal them. we are not, this applies to non-Jews also, you're not supposed to use, to have benefit of objects that were actually used in a service of idolatry. Like the wine offered to the altar of whatever God, you cannot drink that wine. No, God doesn't like it. Okay, and as we mentioned before, personal refinement, growth, and so on. This is expected of any particular single human being in the face of the earth, in all times of history. You should serve God as earth. Again, why is it called earth? Sounds like a lowly thing. No, no, no. It means you were created from earth. That's your normal state of being. And moreover, man and Adame means you have an image of God inside of you. So you're supposed to use that image of God to serve God, to emulate God. You're a holy thing. You're not like another animal. You're not like a plant. You're not like a stone. You're better than that. You're a human being. So go serve God. And again, the emphasis over here is straight. Earth, in this particular case, means this is the way God created you. You're supposed to be serving God in a normal way, in a straight way. Okay. However, sometimes a person leaves the straight path for whatever reason. You don't do what you're supposed to do. You do something else. This, in this case, is called the service as a stone. As we learned before, the generation of the Tower of Babel, they used the bricks and the stones and so on in order to do idolatry. They used the words, so to speak, the letters, stones, in a bad way. That means a sin. That means you're out of the path. That means you're already not straight. You did something wrong. You left the correct straight path. So now we have to do something to go back to the path. That's called tshuva, repentance or whatever, return. The most simple and basic idea of tshuva means regret for the past. It was like acknowledge that this whatever behavior was wrong. And now, after that, take a resolution for the future not to repeat whatever you did. It's two steps, one towards the past and one towards the future. And this is the reason why, going back to the beginning, this is the reason why the second verse, it's in a conditional way. Because not everybody falls into, quote unquote, stones. Not everybody falls into serving God in a wrong way. So then you have to do tshuva and so on. So the first verse talks about the regular, proper, straight service to God. Everybody has to do this. The second one is not talking about everybody has to do this. Why everybody? If you didn't sin, you're not supposed to be doing this. Parenthesis. The Zohar brings an idea that the Mashiach is coming, liasava tzedikaya betiyuvta. In Aramaic, it says to make even the tzaddikim do tshuva, the righteous person to do tshuva also. What does that mean? If they didn't do anything wrong, why did they have to do tshuva? So one way of understanding this is that maybe a person could do more, but he didn't, or she didn't, whatever. It's the same thing. And therefore, a person has to do tshuva even for that. And a deeper explanation, tshuva doesn't mean only for sins. Tshuva is getting close to God. That's why I actually wrote in the translation of the word tshuva, either repentance, which means you did something wrong, or return. Return means reconnect to God. As human beings over here, we are born, as we mentioned before, straight and earth and Adam and Elion, we have the image of God and everything is nice, but the truth is that we feel a certain disconnection from God. And occurrences in life, things that happen to us, they make us feel even further and further from God. And sometimes we have to just reconnect, return, go back to feel connected to God and do things to connect us to God and so on. So again, this service as a stone, what it means is a person did something wrong, resembling the idolatry of the Tower of Babel, stones, bricks, and so on. And that's why it's conditional. This type of altar, this type of elevation to God, toward God, it's conditional. If you don't need it, so you're not going to do it. Now, very nice. We explain the altars, elevation, two types of elevation, earth, stone, idolatry, and so on. Words, who are we and what are we? At the end, the Maimer explains that we are actually the generation of, that's what it's called, the hills of Mashiach. Ikves de Mashiach. That's what it's brought, what it's called. Ikves de Mashiach, the hills of Mashiach. Which means we are the generation, the Rebbe spoke about this many, many times, we are the generation that has to actually accomplish the coming of Mashiach. And this generation, interestingly, it's a reincarnation of the generation of Egypt, which we mentioned before, that itself was the reincarnation of the Tower of Babel. That means that, after all, we are a reincarnation of the Tower of Babel, of the people of the Tower of Babel. That's what we are. That's who we are. And we have the, so to speak, the mission, the task of bringing Mashiach. That means that we have the power of using our quote-unquote stones, our words, our thoughts, our deeds, and so on, to fix what they did wrong. They used the stones to serve idolatry, and we have the power of using our stones, so to speak, to serve God, to reveal godliness in the world. And this can be done in many, many different ways. One way is, in a very global, so to speak, way, okay, make websites and YouTube and classes and blah, blah, blah. That's very nice. So the more that people see this, the more you spread out godliness and goodness in the world and so on. That's good. That's good. And we're all doing this. Fine. But there's deeper than that. Even if you don't, you're not the rabbi of whatever place you are, and you're not the one doing videos in whatever place you are and so on, but you can use your words within your own home to speak nicely to your children. And if you don't have children, to your wife. And if you don't have wife, to yourself. Have nice thoughts. Think better about people. Think better about the world around you. That means using stones, but in a positive way. Those stones that were used thousands of years ago by other people, that we actually represent those people, but in a good way. And that's why, again, these two verses that resemble stone and earth, earth and stone, they represent these two ways of serving God. The regular way we should serve God, as I explained before, and the way to serve God if you did something wrong, if you went out of the path, how to go back into the path, tshuva and so on, stones, in both ways. But the first one is everybody obligated, and the second one, not everybody is obligated. And the point is, why do we bring this idea, why does the Rebbe bring this idea of our generation being a reincarnation, Gilgul, of the Egypt generation, and the Egypt generation being a reincarnation of the Babel generation, and so on? The idea is very simple. Don't think this is something somebody else has to do. No, this is ourselves. And again, the Rebbe mentioned so many times that our generation is the one in charge of bringing Mashiach. And this is also why, interestingly, I wrote this in the name of a Medrash, etc. The Rebbe brings it very shortly in the discourse, that Moshe Rabbeinu is the first Redeemer and the last Redeemer. What does that mean? Moshe Rabbeinu was from Shevet Levi, from the tribe of Levi. And Mashiach is from the tribe of Yehuda. So Moshe cannot be the Redeemer. It doesn't make any sense. Maybe he was the first Redeemer. He took us out of Egypt, but it's not the last Redeemer. What are you talking about? And the answer is an aspect of Moshe Rabbeinu. Not he himself. Which aspect of Moshe Rabbeinu? As I mentioned before, Torah. Learning Torah. It is our learning of Torah what redeems us from our own limitations, which shows us the path how to grow in personal growth, in religious growth, and so on. That aspect of Moshe Rabbeinu, that's the Redeemer. Actually, our sages explain this in the Mishnah. Pirkei Avos, the Ethics of Our Fathers, has five chapters. Only five chapters. And with time, they added a sixth chapter, another one. Why? The custom is to learn Pirkei Avos, the Ethics of Our Fathers, from Pesach up to Shavuos. And there are five Shabbosim. Six Shabbosim, I'm sorry, six Shabbosim. But Pirkei Avos has only five chapters. So then our sages added a sixth chapter of Pirkei Avos. Over there in the sixth chapter, it says, one of the ideas that it says is that God gave us Luchois, God gave us the tablets where the commandments are and so on. And the Torah says that the words of the commandments in the tablets was actually ingrained. It's actually carved into the tablets. The way the Torah says is chorus ala luchois. It was carved into the stones when Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Mount Sinai and so on with the stones. But the way it's written, it's weird, because it says instead of chorus, it says chairus. You could read freedom, chairus. Don't read chorus, which means carved. Read chairus, which means freedom. That means that there's freedom into learning Torah. And if any non-Jew is going to say, yeah, but I heard that we cannot learn Torah. Wait a second. No, that's not true. A non-Jew learning Torah regarding his, her mission to serve God is like a high priest, like a Kohen Gadol, is like a high priest that goes into the innermost part of the temple and so on. So, there is a merit into learning Torah. There is even some kind of mitzvah into learning Torah, the part that you're supposed to be learning. So that learning is what actually gives you freedom, what actually develops you and brings you closer to God. This is basically the ideas. I think it finishes here. Yeah, it finishes here. This is basically ideas. Again, we all have... So we all have a responsibility, so to speak, for doing both types of service to God.